Patrick Henry gives a speech that ignites a revolution. Give me liberty or give me death. At the end of that speech, that room, according to John Ridpath, who I think is a really good historian, is stunned into silence. Now, this is a room full of intellectuals. I mean, I don't know if Thomas Jefferson is in the room, but it's those kinds of guys. And Patrick Henry lays down the gauntlet. And the reason he's doing it is because of Locke's ideas 100 years prior to that. Freedom is on the table, and they could taste it. They could smell it. They knew this is a good thing, okay? He gives that speech. We have a revolution. The world, historically speaking, the first country in history is now established based on individual rights. Huge. So you study some philosophy, and the right philosophy, and you start to think, well, my mind is viable. It's, you know, the volition, man, where's the switch? There's a real world out there, and I can do something about it. I can build this business. I can pursue my goals. I can be happy in this life on this earth. I'm going to do that. Great story is when I first started, this would have been probably 1985, so I think I had my first wines made. So if ever I had a couple of slow days at the winery, I'd go to Southern California and try to sell wine. And I was just miserable that first year because it was tough. You know, we were a little bit maybe in a recession. Sales were tough to find. Nobody knew who I was. I was just literally knocking on doors. I was in Orange County, and then somebody had made an appointment with me over in West LA. And so I just drove like a bat out of hell to try to make what I thought was an appointment in West LA in Santa Monica. It turned out that it was a guy who was not the wine buyer, but I think he was looking for me just to drop off samples for the owner. And I was kind of reading the situation thinking the owner's never going to see the samples. This guy's just going to take them home. And so I kind of started to answer some questions to the guy, and it kind of confirmed the fact that, you know, he had no business telling me to come drop off samples. I stormed out of the place, furious, almost ready to quit. You know, like, this is not going to work. And so, you know, the capitalist in me, though, said, what should I do? Well, I should find the guy's competitor. Somebody around here is got a brain that's working. Somebody around here is going to listen to what I have to say. And feel the passion about what I'm doing, what I'm trying to embark upon. And I walked into what was then Cock and Crow Liquors. There's a guy behind the register, smoking a cigarette, doesn't even notice me coming in. He's just like nursing a cigarette. I walk right past him. I go to the back. There's this, you know, nice little wine section. So I go over to the guy. I go, would it be possible for me to make an appointment with the wine buyer? And the guy goes, I'm the wine buyer. And I'm thinking, you're not the wine buyer. You're not the wine buyer, dude. You know, he goes, where are you from? I go, Santa Barbara. And he goes, where in Santa Barbara? I go, out toward Lompoc. He goes, oh, in that cool climate. He goes, yeah. He goes, I like the acid and some of the fruit out there. I was in shock. This guy is the wine buyer. I tasted him on four wines. And he goes, I think he said, you got a pencil? And I go, no. He goes, well, you're going to need one. He hands me his pencil. And he goes, I'll take three cases of that, two of that, and four of those. And if you could bring them on Wednesday, that'd be great. I went out to my car and started crying. I just was just stunned. That one moment, it just kept me going. It was great, you know. And then the other thing that studying philosophy has done for me is to help me understand the importance of integration and causality. The idea, and winemaking is a pretty serious craft. There's a lot going on. So I'm much better now with this idea that what I do, if I'm pruning today, the effect that it's going to have on the wine 2 to 3 years from now, that everything you do in the sequence, you know, what you do here is going to have an effect down the line. So you've got to study down the line. Just like you have to study what you've done prior to this point to understand why you've even gotten to this point. Do you have two buds on the spur or one from last year or three? And then how is that going to influence the future and what you're going to do right now? Integration is a huge theme in my winemaking. certain challenges along the way. We planted all of the vines on their own roots in the beginning, which is atypical for American viticulture because we have certain diseases in the soil that are native of our soils. And so it's difficult sometimes to take European-blooded stocks like Pinot Noir and Cabernet Sauvignon. Those are all European-blooded vines. They all probably originally came from the Mediterranean somewhere. They did not evolve with resistance to various organisms in the soil that we have here. So you've got to put American species down as the roots and then put your Pinot Noir and your Cabernet on top. Now, after 20 years, 20 plus years, I'm starting to feel like I really understand the influences of the sun and the air and water, you know, in the vineyard. And it was a couple of years ago, I stood at the top of the property and I looked at everything. Don't get me wrong, I'm very proud of everything I've done. We've made some good wines here. I think we have a good reputation. It's not for lack of effort. The whole thing was screwed up. I looked at, you know, the whole thing, just row after row, it's just all wrong. All of it, you know. And so we've already ripped it out once, maybe twice, and it's got to come out again if it's going to be right, you know. The thing that's interesting to me is the idea that values are not intrinsic, okay? That is, you know, here's a statue. The value of the statue isn't sort of like somehow mystically in the atoms, you know, of this thing. Its value is, you know, what I place on it, or what you place on it, or what anybody else places on it. And that value is integrated into man's greater value of his life. Or in I think, a rational ethics, I do believe that it's true that a man's life is an end in itself. That you know, right to life, I think everybody can kind of comprehend that, right? It's your, you know, you got the, you know, even liberals, even conservatives, right to life, oh yeah, everybody's got a right to their life. You know, my question a lot of times is, well, do you think that if you lock somebody up in a cage like an animal, that is really, that's the life of a man, you know? Because, and why do I say that? Because they're so quick to negate the right to liberty. They're corollaries, life, liberty, property. These are corollaries. You don't have one of them without the other. I think if I could just do one thing that it would really help, I would, if I could, you know, I dream a genie, the politics, I would liberalize distribution and shipping. I would make it so that a human being can ship something to another human being in the United States of America. I would make it so that a human being at a winery could ship a bottle of wine to another human being in 50 states. I was very disappointed by the decision that the Supreme Court handed down not too long ago, and our industry was saying, oh, they're going to liberalize it. They're going to open up the shipping. They're going to tell all these states, you know, you got to allow for free trade. The decision that was handed down, the Supreme Court basically said, you either have to let, if your wineries in state are shipping out, then to be fair, you got to let wineries outside of the state ship in. But you powers that be in the various states, if you want to annihilate all trade, you can do that too in the name of fairness. So as long as you tell your wineries they can't ship out, well, then you can block the whole thing and nobody can ship in. Now, that is such a breach of freedom. What it should be is they shouldn't even be asking the question. It shouldn't even be an issue in the United States. You want to ship something? Ship it. I want to ship something to Kentucky or one of these so-called Georgia, I think, you know, felony states. It's a felony for Brian Babcock to ship one of my customers there a bottle of wine. I mean, why? What? Who am I injuring? I don't, you know, walk around thinking about Ayn Rand, you know, or John Galt or Atlas Shrugged every second of the day and like, how can I make this be, you know, Galt's Gulch? If, you know, but if it was Galt's Gulch, the government would not be permitted to take one step on the property. So it's, yeah, who is John Galt? Who is John Locke? Who is Patrick Henry? Who's Aristotle? The John Galt is the guy in fiction that Patrick Henry is the guy in real life that's gets it and is fighting for freedom. You know, and is going to be steadfast and is not going to let down. And the world needs a few of those. The world needs an Atlas. to hold up the globe. You know, the world needs a John Galt or a Patrick Henry to, you know, to say this is freedom is a good thing. Man needs freedom. We got to be free.